NPR.org.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Bowing to a fiery onslaught from conservative activists, CBS has recalled its scheduled miniseries on the life and times of Ronald and Nancy Reagan. It was supposed to air in 2 weeks. Now the besieged network has dropped the miniseries, shunting it back to editors and off to a much smaller Showtime audience. Someday, maybe. Reagan acolytes are claiming victory and justice. Critics are charging intimidation and capitulation. Tonight on Point, Ronald Reagan once more in the eye of the storm. We begin tonight in New York. Jim Rutenberg covers the media business for the New York Times. He's read the Reagan miniseries script in its entirety, and it was his October 21st Times piece on the planned four-hour show that first sparked the controversy. I asked him exactly what persuaded CBS to dump the Reagan series.
You know, it's an interesting question that I don't know if we'll get a complete, clear answer on. CBS says that the top boss there, Les Moonves, had not really paid very close attention to this project until our story came out and decided then to take a second look, screened the film in its entirety, it's 3 hours without commercials, and decided, lo and behold, this is unfair, and went to trying to fix it, decided he couldn't, and dumped it off on Showtime.
Does that story sound credible to you, Jim Rutenberg?
I have to assume it's credible until I find otherwise, and right now that's the answer I have, and that's the answer that I have to report. There was a lot of pressure on them at the same time.
Describe that pressure to us. Where it came from, how quickly it developed.
It developed pretty quickly. I mean, I wonder if even some of it started as I was doing my reporting, because I was calling Reagan loyalists and Reagan family members, and so the word started getting around. By the time the story hit, I think people were ready to jump, and cable news, which is always ready to itself jump on a story, had an ample list of people who are ready to go on and speak out.
Can you describe the array of critics who came out to pound on CBS for its plans to air this miniseries?
Well, you had everybody from the Matt Drudges, the talk show radio hosts, the Sean Hannitys of cable news and Joe Scarborough's. You had everyday people, or at least everyday Reagan loyalists, not in the political world, not in the media world, who were going on the web and speaking out. We had a gentleman in Bethesda, Maryland, who started a website called BoycottCBS.com, a website he started for a total of $9, which got immense traffic. And so you just had the cycle of cable news to talk radio to the Internet.
And there was a word put out to 100 CBS advertisers we read warning them not to be involved with this show. Do you know if advertisers said to CBS, we can't back this?
We have no evidence that any advertiser directly said that. However, we don't know how locked in the deals were yet anyway. And with the 100 sponsors list is just those companies that are known to advertise the most, but it's not a list of advertisers per se.
We're reading here that this may be the biggest broadcast network step down since 1969, when CBS took the Smothers Brothers off the air for their anti-Vietnam War attitude and statements. How unusual is this step by CBS?
Yeah, you know, it's incredibly unusual. And this, unlike that, it's such a clear picture. Again, what the reality is behind the scenes, we'll have to keep trying to figure out. But the picture of cause and effect seems much more clear here. So I think the question now is, will interest groups be emboldened to pound on TV networks in the future even harder, knowing that their hard work will have results?
Jim, you've seen the entire script of this miniseries. Almost no one outside of CBS has actually viewed the entire thing. Give us a sense of where it was generous to Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan, where it may not have been.
It was generous to them in terms of their relationship, for sure. They come off as two incredibly dedicated lovers and partners. At the same time, it also shows that their commitment to each other left no room for their children, but I don't think that's in dispute anyway. It gives Reagan a lot of credit for really believing in his principles, really standing up for his principles. He's not shown as a cynical politician calculating to get ahead. He's shown as a principled man. It doesn't give them credit in terms of the economy, because we know that there was a rebound. It doesn't really address the great wealth that was created, and it definitely highlights a lot of the big black eyes of that administration And I think you'd say the black eyes outweigh the number of sunshiny appraisals.
What are the particular points on which it's tough on Ronald Reagan?
It's very tough on him in terms of AIDS. The much-discussed line in the script is Reagan telling Nancy Reagan, "They that live in sin shall die in sin," when she asks him to support some AIDS research funding. And Dutch, the Edmund Morris biography, does have an account of Reagan wondering aloud whether AIDS was a plague brought down by the Lord, but it's not a punishing tone. So I think they have something to base his line on, but I don't know if the tone is quite on the money. It's very tough on him in terms of the trust he put in people who perhaps shouldn't have had trust put in them.
And it portrays his wife, Nancy Reagan, as a very domineering, shrill, controlling spouse in the White House, I guess.
Yes, it does. Again, though, to be fair, because a lot of the reaction is based on snapshots from the script, but the overall picture of Nancy is someone who she's doing it only to protect her husband, and the script never wavers from that. So, yes, very domineering, very tough, but at the same time, it's never portrayed as anything but out of love.
Jim, as you read this script, did you find yourself thinking there's a lot here that's outside what we normally see in dramatic presentations of the lives of big figures? I mean, many people have been the subject of TV miniseries. Was this really beyond the pale, or just had an audience that was much more sensitive than your average audience?
I think it's probably somewhere in between. I mean, the audience is very sensitive, and maybe that's what CBS miscalculated. But at the same time, he's a living president. He's sick. Post 9/11, he's kind of more revered than ever. So there was the Nixon movie, you know, was so conspiratorial that it, I think, offended people less. Also, the script didn't leak before it hit the theaters. So I don't know. I think it's a little different. I don't know how many living presidents we've seen dramatized on television.
How's CBS looking today? Sheepish? Shamefaced? What's the attitude there, Jim?
They're quiet today. PR-wise, they would seem to have a problem. Because whatever the truth is behind the scenes, and whether they cave to pressure or not, it certainly looks as if they cave to pressure. And I think the Hollywood community, we're going to hear a lot more from people there complaining that CBS caved, and what's this mean for the future, and we're allowing political parties to censor our content. So the appearance is bad, no matter what the truth is.
Jim, thanks very much for joining us.
Sure.
Jim Rutenberg covers the media industry for the New York Times. He spoke with us from New York. The political career of Ronald Reagan was always a charged one. 2 decades after he took the White House, it's still stirring emotions. This week, CBS pulled a miniseries on the Reagans in response to a barrage of criticism from conservative groups. Supporters of Reagan were angered by script material which contained unflattering, fictionalized conversations. Defenders of the program point to many examples of loosely interpreted historical fiction on TV and say that Ronald Reagan is being treated like a sacred cow. What do you make of the Reagan series recall? Did CBS do the right and decent thing by pulling the plug on the series? Or was it bowing to intimidation? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Alexandria, Virginia, is Tim Graham, Director of Media Analysis at the Media Research Center, a conservative group dedicated to correcting what it sees as liberal bias in the media. Good evening and welcome, Tim Graham.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for being with us.
Sure.
Tim, your group was right in the middle of the attack on this miniseries and efforts to get CBS to pull the plug on it. What first got your attention, and how was this accomplished?
Well, obviously, we saw it like everybody else through the Jim Rutenberg story, and I was waiting for Jim to mention us in the list of internet sites and so on that were part of this initiative. We had noticed it, and it came to Brent Baker's attention, who writes our almost daily Cyber Alert report. It's an email we send out to about 14,000 free subscribers, and he said we should do something about the sponsors. So we drafted a letter for Brent Bozell, which he sent to...
Who's the head of the Media Research Center.
Right, to the top 100 sponsors. What that letter said, and it's on the website at mrc.org, basically suggested, we think you need to look at this script before you put your money behind it.
Did you get any response from those advertisers? Do you know if any of them...
Not that I have heard. I wasn't responsible for contacting the sponsors, and I haven't heard from others that there was a response back to us.
So you were right in the middle of it, but you weren't the only ones clamoring for this thing to be shut down. What else was going on, Tim Graham?
Well, I mean, I think, again, we weren't so much clamoring it to be shut down. I think I would say we were surprised that this step was taken. What we were suggesting was that this was going to be a film that was going to be unfair, and we were hoping that that pressure from sponsors would make people look at the film. And I think the fact is that what happened was Les Moonves looked at the film, and he decided it was not appropriate. You know, I wouldn't characterize the Media Research's role in this, the Media Research Center's role in this, as trying to get it killed. And I think, you know, I think the whole thing here was I was hoping that we were going to get some more careful attention paid to it. I think a better example of what I sort of expected to happen was what happened in 1989 when NBC made a TV movie glorifying the lawyers who got Roe versus Wade through the Supreme Court. Due to the subject matter, advertisers were awfully sketchy about supporting that movie, and yet NBC put it on the air anyway. That's sort of the model I assumed that this was going to work on. We were just hoping to sort of, again, do what we always do, and that is highlight areas where we believe that our major television networks today are demeaning and demonizing conservative leaders and ideas. This certainly would fit in that category. When you have President Reagan calling himself the Antichrist in this film, I don't think you're looking at a film that's aiming for a fair representation. I don't think you're looking at a film that, that lives up to CBS's claim that it was meticulously researched. In fact, in Rutenberg's article, the screenwriters began admitting that lines that they're using, they made up. So obviously I think when you make, it's one thing to put words in the mouth of a president or a presidential character, but when they start taking on these rather extreme terms, so the president calling himself the Antichrist, I think you're looking at a movie that's not aiming to enlighten, it's aiming to demonize.
Tim Graham, you know, TV biopics have been made on a lot of prominent figures. I mean, about as prominent as you can get, Jesus, Joan of Arc, Nixon movies, JFK, Napoleon, Churchill, I mean, Hitler this year. And I'm sure all of them had elements that one viewer or another might not like. People take editorial decisions about how they present or creative decisions about how people are presented. Is the Ronald Reagan miniseries being held to a different standard here, to a higher standard? Is he being held sacrosanct from what many others have gone through?
I wouldn't say so. I think that, again, we weren't expecting that this film better be glorified 100% pro-Reagan propaganda or else. I don't think that was the expectation. I think we were hoping for some moderating of what we were hearing was in the script. I think that, you face this problem when you decide to dramatize history. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, yeah, how many people were in the room with Hitler when he was, about to commit suicide, et cetera, et cetera. So you are, a lot of times you're taking liberties with history. I think part of this is based on the fear that, look, even today now we have people who did not grow up in the Reagan years who are of voting age. So it becomes a question about, how will this president be presented to the American people? Will it be somewhat accurate? Will it be accurate in general, if not accurate in the particulars? For example, if the Reagan family says it was not his habit to curse, to put that in then, it's not just wrong in terms of the specifics in that nobody can prove he said this particular thing at this particular time, but you're actually presenting a Reagan which no one recognizes. So, I mean, I think, obviously people have tried to say this, there's hundreds of movies about the Kennedys. Well, again, I think in this particular case they ought to try to pull out the one particular film and one particular script and try to show me where John Kennedy said he was the Antichrist, and then maybe we would have a discussion about the comparative fairness of them.
But you don't see it in this one, and as it turns out, it's off CBS, headed to a very, very much smaller audience on Showtime. Tim Graham, stand by. There's a lot more we want to get into here. We're talking tonight about CBS throwing overboard its miniseries on Ron and Nancy Reagan and the storms before and after that decision. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you make of the Reagan series recall? Did CBS do the right thing in pulling the plug and shunting it to Showtime? Is this a bow to accuracy and decent respect for a living president, or is it knuckling under to conservative pressure and the mythological view of a man? Join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about CBS throwing overboard its miniseries on Ron and Nancy Reagan and the storms before and after that decision. You can join the conversation. What do you make of the Reagan series recall? Should CBS have cut out the offending scenes and forged ahead? Should it have told critics to take a hike? Who's acting on principle here? Who's not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with Tim Graham, joining us from Alexandria, Virginia. He's director of media analysis at the Media Research Center, which played a big role in getting CBS's attention, ultimately, no doubt, in helping persuade it to drop the miniseries or shunt it to Showtime. We're joined now from Tucson, Arizona, by Michael Schaller. He's professor of history at the University of Arizona, author of Reckoning with Reagan, America and Its President in the 1980s. Good evening and welcome, Michael Schaller.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Michael Schaller, we know you haven't seen the whole thing. Very few people have, but you've seen a bunch of reporting on elements of the script. You know Reagan's history and personal history and political history very well. What do you think of the criticisms of these segments of the miniseries that have drawn so much fire? Is the fire justified?
Well, as you say, few of us, except for Jim Rutenberg, have actually seen the film or the script in its entirety. So I think we all need to be a little cautious because, as he pointed out, words that may read one way on a page can play very differently.
Absolutely.
On a video.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's also important to look at this in a wider context, that whatever this made-for-TV movie does or doesn't do, the criticism is part of a larger effort by Reagan acolytes and loyalists to reconstruct a sort of heroic presidency. And it can be seen – and I think the criticism of the movie that we've heard is a criticism really directed at efforts to not do a hatchet job but to – take Reagan down to the level of mortality rather than a Mount Rushmore figure.
I have a feeling Tim Graham will challenge on that, but let's go to the details.
Yes.
a little bit, if we may. I mean, this is a script that, as reported anyway, portrays the former president as somewhat disengaged, early symptoms of Alzheimer's, little or no functional concern for a number of things,
right,
including the AIDS epidemic.
Right. Well, take AIDS, for example. I only know from what I read in the Times how it's portrayed, and apparently there is no direct source for him saying those who live in sin die in sin. And Reagan, of course, was friendly with a number of prominent gay actors and actresses from his Hollywood days, whom he no doubt sympathized with, some of whom like Rock Hudson, who became ill. But what we do know is Reagan, as president, refused ever to endorse anything approaching a safe-sex public health campaign when his own Surgeon General pleaded with him, C. Everett Koop, to do so. He gave one significant talk on AIDS in 1987 in which he said two remarkable things. One was that scientists were researching how AIDS is transmitted. It was quite well known how AIDS was transmitted. Reagan was uncomfortable in discussing sexual or body fluids or intravenous drug use. Mm. And he urged people to donate blood to the Red Cross because they could not get infected by doing so. That pretty much summarized his sort of deafening silence on AIDS. So he may not have condemned victims of AIDS as sinners, but he certainly did not lend his prestige to any kind of public awareness campaign.
Tim Graham, how about it? In Dutch, the Edmund Morris authorized biography of Ronald Reagan, the former president, is quoted as saying, "Maybe the Lord brought down this plague because illicit sex is against the Ten Commandments." So did the miniseries get it so wrong?
Yeah, I think that it – well, first of all, yeah, it's attributing to Reagan a religious view, which is not a very Christian view, first of all. I mean, again, this seems to me like the Hollywood left's idea of what Christianity is, and as opposed to what Christianity really is.
But Edmund Morris is quoting, as I understand it, President Reagan himself here in that line.
But it's not. But that doesn't match what he says in the film. But my point to you would be, look, in the it's also wrong in the particulars. I mean, by the professor's measuring stick, I could argue that President Bush has done next to nothing on abortion. Here he signed this bill today. The fact of the matter, he said as a president, he said next to nothing about abortion. He has spoken out at two marches for life by telephone, not in person, but by telephone. It would be very easy by that standard then to say, because President Bush so rarely speaks about abortion, nothing's been done. I think the fact of the matter is, if you go back and look at the documentary evidence, you can go to AIDS activists like Virginia Apuzzo, a lesbian, who will say, in the 1980s, in the mid-1980s, we were able to get into, meet with the Health and Human Services Secretary, Margaret Heckler. We got attention. The money quickly ramped up. Let's remember, the Democrats were in charge of the House at this time in our history. It's not like AIDS was going to be underfunded.
So you're just not going to accept that view of Ronald Reagan's view on AIDS. Let's pick up another one here, Michael Schaller, if we may. The film, apparently, or the miniseries, apparently, portrays Ronald Reagan in his second term as suffering from Alzheimer's, being controlled by Nancy Reagan, out of touch. That's raised objections. What do you say?
Well, again, not being part of the Reagan family, who would have noticed this most deeply, it's difficult to say. But what one can say is nearly every memoir written by a member of the Reagan inner circle, Peggy Noonan and others, who certainly were not anti-Reagan, all of whom began talking about Reagan's detachment, that he could focus on certain issues but was increasingly detached as his presidency went on. And one of the interesting things, though, is also to note in the second round of memoirs, people like Peggy Noonan and Michael Deaver, all of whom made these comments, have revised that in the second set of memoirs they've written, in which Reagan is no longer kind of well-meaning but sometimes mistaken, but is all-knowing. He's no longer an idiot savant. He's simply a savant. There's been a sort of effort to rewrite the Reagan legacy into that he was always an all-knowing, all-in-control. When the records, you know, one can approve of much of what Reagan did and recognize he was immortal, that he may have been suffering from early-onset Alzheimer's or other problems. And I think the criticism of this film accords with the effort by Reagan acolytes to reconstruct a Reagan who could do no wrong.
Tim Graham, Michael Schaller, stand by. Callers want to join us. I'd like to invite them in. Peter's calling from Belmont, Massachusetts. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi. I find it interesting to have this subject on the heels of Rush Limbaugh getting kicked off ESPN.
What's the connection, Peter?
Well, I think ESPN has every right to kick off somebody who they think are making comments that are going to offend their advertisers and offend their audience. I mean, they have every right to. And I'm not at all defending, you know, what he said, but this is not something that's rare in the media. People say inappropriate things, content is inappropriate, and to save their skins and to save their advertisers, corporations make decisions to remove that content, to remove that broadcaster. But when that happened to Rush Limbaugh, I don't remember seeing a lot of kick up in the newspapers or in the media saying, oh my God, ESPN is censoring, you know, it's being censored because of pressure.
Well, who's to decide in this
issue here?
Who's to decide in this case, Peter, what's inappropriate?
Well, it seems to me that CBS is the one to decide. They're the ones who have to keep their audience. They're the ones who have to keep their advertisers. Just as it was ESPN's decision to, I believe it was ESPN who he worked for, to kick off a commentator who was going to embarrass them, it's CBS's decision if they feel that there's going to be content put on the air that's going to cause them problems with their audience or with their advertisers.
Peter, we've got it, and thanks for your call. For an answer, I want to turn to yet another guest tonight. Mark Hertzgard is joining us from San Francisco. He's a journalist, author of On Bended Knee, The Press and the Reagan Presidency. Good evening and welcome, Mark Hertzgard.
Hi, how are you?
Great. I think you heard the query right there. Is this just like Rush Limbaugh writ large? If ESPN could dump Rush, why shouldn't CBS dump the Reagans?
Well, I'm not sure it's quite like that. You know, Mr. Limbaugh, I believe himself, was happy to go off the air. He acknowledged that he had a dependency problem. To me, what's more interesting is the parallel, or the non-parallel, if you will. There was just very recent drama about President George W. Bush and his response to the September 11th terrorist attacks. It was written by an avowedly conservative writer who admitted putting words into President Bush's mouth that President Bush himself had not said.
This was on Showtime, very laudatory D.C. 9/11 time of crisis.
Yeah. And again, a docudrama. And needless to say, we did not hear this kind of complaining from the right wing when that film went on the air.
But I think
there's a question that we have to raise here. This is not a matter of accuracy. It's the kind of stuff that people of political partisan views are trying to keep off the air because it doesn't agree with their views.
But Tim Graham tonight with us and Patty Davis elsewhere, the Wall Street Journal, are saying this miniseries was part and parcel of a liberal media effort to tear down conservatives in the United States. Mark Hertzgard.
Give me a break. How? I mean, it's been 30 years that the right wing has been selling that pap about the United States has a liberal media. The other parallel that I would draw is that here again, CBS, just like it did 20 years ago when Mr. Reagan was president, CBS is censoring itself. I reported it on bended knee the way that CBS ordered its Washington coverage toned down to make it less critical of President Reagan. In particular, Leslie Stahl, who's now on 60 Minutes but was then the White House correspondent for CBS News, repeatedly had her coverage toned down and censored by executives in New York. And there's we don't know for sure if that self-censorship was being ordered by CBS corporate in the same way that we're not going to know in the current episode whether CBS corporate is ordering that kind of self-censorship.
And when you say CBS corporate, the implication there being the business guys, the bean counters, saying we can't afford to go forward with this.
Well, and they can't afford to go forward for, again, the same reasons as 20 years ago. Right now, CBS's corporate boss, Viacom, is hoping to persuade Washington to expand the number of properties, media properties, that any corporation can own. 20 years ago, CBS corporate was hoping to do the same thing with the Reagan presidency, and Ronald Reagan was preparing to end all restrictions on how many stations a given media company could own. Mm.
Tim Graham, jump in here. We've got the view on the table that this isn't a matter of Ronald Reagan being torn down, but rather Ronald Reagan being turned into a kind of untouchable hero figure. Where's the right balance?
Well, it is very much a matter of accuracy. Everything that we have complained about with Reagan, whether it's CBS Entertainment or CBS News, is about a matter of accuracy. Just because Leslie Stahl, one of the most notoriously biased anti-Reagan journalists, is being somehow censored in New York, I can tell you from our 30,000 videotape collection, there was a lot of anti-Reagan bias that never quite got through the filter, whatever it might be. I think they're creating a real false picture here, that the notion that what the Reagan lovers across this country are looking for is to put him on Mount Rushmore and to try to suggest that he never had any flaws. I think that that's just, you know, that's kind of silly. I don't think anybody's trying to say that. What we're trying to say is when the professor tries to suggest that we don't know for sure whether President Reagan had Alzheimer's disease in his second term, yet his doctors have said very much that onset was well after his term. They've gone back that scientifically and said there is no sign of onset during his term. So what we're trying to do now is we're far enough away now from the Reagan presidency that what the Reagan loyalists is, we're going to have our hands full simply by trying to remind people what the Reagan years were actually like, what Reagan actually said, what Leslie Stahl or CBS actually said about Reagan at that time. This is all a matter of accuracy, and it's all a matter of making people aware of what the truth is and what the public record states.
So that particular culture war is going to go on. Paul's calling from Topsfield, Massachusetts. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Good to have you.
I'm just set myself up in position. I'm a lifelong Democrat. I think Ronald Reagan was the worst president of my lifetime. But that being said, I think that
Paul, you're breaking up on us here. What I managed to catch there, Michael Schaller, was the sense that Ronald Reagan's being kicked while he's down. He's 92 years old now, has Alzheimer's, in not good shape at all. Should that put him off limits for this kind of fictionalized treatment?
Well, I don't think so. As Mark Hertzgard just said, that there was certainly a laudatory docudrama done about George Bush a few weeks ago. Nobody objected to the depictions there. I think if age and death put you off limits, we would have no drama and little history. But I think it's also important to remember that history is always contested. And accuracy, while is always a fluid concept. I was most taken in the last week by two of Reagan's children, Michael and Patty Davis, who very emotionally denounced this depiction as a desecration of their father. They'd perhaps forgotten the books they both wrote 15 years ago, giving exactly this portrait of their father in many ways. I don't mean they're hypocrites. Things change. Their own interpretations change. And I think CBS had a right to give an interpretation. Others can challenge it.
So, Mark Hertzgard, what about CBS's move? Is there any way, is there some way that can be justified in your mind? Our caller was suggesting it's a business decision, their right to make it, or do they have a higher principle they should be answering to that leaves them standing by the work, whether or not they're uncomfortable with pieces of it?
I think even if they if you do argue that, they surely mishandled this in a most just almost embarrassing way. Where I do think the right wing has a point here is, if this thing if this film is not acceptable for your broadcast outfit, how dare you put it on Showtime? Is it somehow less onerous if you show it in only 14 million homes rather than 108 million homes? So I think that needs to be said. On the other hand, the larger point, yes, in the old days, before the Reagan presidency, I might add, broadcasters in this country had to answer to the public interest, and you had a responsibility not to curry favor, to let the facts fall where they may. And what really changed, and it's interesting now that it's 20 years later, it was Ronald Reagan who, when he deregulated television in the 1980s, and said, you don't have to restrict your ownership. You can put on as much content as you like. The market is right. Get the government out of there. What that has led to is today's world of infotainment masquerading as news, increasing conglomerate control over news, and now there's even been a backlash that has oddly united left and right against the Federal Communications Commission, which is now trying to add yet more properties to the media mogul. So it's very interesting to see this. I would like to return, though, quickly, if I could just ask Mr. Park, why were you not so worried about the, if accuracy is your watchword, why didn't you make this kind of complaints when there was blatant inaccuracy in the docudrama about President George W. Bush in 9/11?
Tim Graham, I think that's for you.
Well, again, it's sort of silly. I mean, look, what is the Media Research Center about? We are about documenting and exposing liberal media bias.
So accuracy only counts on one side?
That's correct. We're an ombudsman for the conservative movement, and it's not our job. There's fairness and accuracy in reporting. There's other groups whose job is solely to focus on the news or entertainment they perceive to be conservatively biased.
Well, how about right here on this show, then? Will you say that for the purposes of this show, that inaccuracy should be condemned no matter who it's about?
I would say I'm very uncomfortable on either side with docudrama, especially, again, as it concerns what are the people who are going to see these films, what are they going to take away from it? It's the same thing we had with Oliver Stone's JFK, is that unfortunately people take away from it the idea that it's history when it's not.
Got it, but no question where you're lining up. Tim Graham, Michael Schaller, Mark Hertzgard, stick with us. I'm Tom Asprick. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Asprick. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about CBS throwing overboard its miniseries on Ron and Nancy Reagan and the storms before and after that decision. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you make of the Reagan series recall? Is this a bow to accuracy and decent respect for a living president? Or is it knuckling under to conservative pressure and the mythological view of a man? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guest tonight, joining us from Alexandria, Virginia, Tim Graham. He's Director of Media Analysis at the Media Research Center in Tucson, Arizona. Michael Schaller, Professor of History at the University of Arizona, author of Reckoning with Reagan. And with us from San Francisco tonight, Mark Hertzgard, journalist, author of On Bended Knee, and more recently, The Eagle's Shadow, Why America Fascinates and Infuriates the World. We're joined right now from Orlando, Florida, by Anthony. Hi, Anthony. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thanks.
I feel like the student in class raises their hand and says, you know, I don't understand, because I don't, in the sense that everybody who's involved in this conversation lived through the Reagan years. They remember a man who was at times incredibly articulate and did a fabulous job of leading the country, I think. But at the same time, he also had the propensity at times to say things that would just, you know, off the wall and kind of crazy and stupid.
But Anthony, if what's portrayed in a particular show doesn't line up with your memory or in an individual's memory or the record as they know it, should that show be off the air?
Should that show be off? Should it be? It doesn't line up with the record. It doesn't seem to me that this show, you know, not having seen it, and it doesn't seem that anybody on your panel of guests has seen it either. It's hard to say, but. Whether it lines up with the record, I mean, it seems to me that going back to what you've said about the AIDS crisis and what Reagan did about
okay.
it, the record does show that Ronald Reagan did very little in terms of trying to deal with that disease. The record does show, as you pointed out, with a quote from Edmund Morris's book, that Ronald Reagan said something.
There's a biblical reference there, a Ten Commandments. Right.
I mean, your guest earlier kind of.
So
I'm not sure what that defense was exactly, but.
But I hear you saying no one is blameless, no one's without bruises. So let's not get too particular about the details, Anthony.
No,
is that wrong?
I'm not saying let's not get particular about the details. I mean, if you ask Donald Reagan whether Nancy Reagan was a controlling woman or not, I think Donald Reagan would say that she was, having had firsthand experience with her. If this movie portrays Nancy Reagan as a controlling woman, as a controlling wife, and somebody who was kind of pushy in the White House, well.
So then you're saying close enough here, close enough for
yeah.
horseshoes. It's lining up with your memory. Anthony, thanks for the call. Michael Schaller, close enough from what you've read, and what about the points upon which it doesn't seem to have it right? Lou Cannon, very widely respected biographer of Ronald Reagan, film apparently alleges that Mr. Reagan supplied names to the Hollywood blacklist. Lou Cannon says that is really wrong. The House Un-American Activities Committee was very unhappy with Ronald Reagan because he didn't name names, says Lou Cannon.
Well, I'm not actually sure about that one way or the other, so I'll defer to Cannon, not knowing. I haven't read the transcripts of the closed hearings on HUAC, so
But that
I
seems like a pretty
say.
Significant point. I mean, in terms of accuracy, that's one that, gosh, to lay that on someone if, in fact, their core biographer or a big biographer says they didn't do it, that's pretty heavy.
Well, actually, there are transcripts of Reagan speaking to the committee. The question was he providing names of people they already knew? Was he and knowing they already knew them? One of the often the House Un-American Activities Committee sort of had this ritual requirement to repeat names just to get people sort of in the mode. But I think that, of course, was long pre-presidential, and this movie focuses on the presidential years. So I wouldn't – I'm not sure that that's highly relevant. But take something that I think has angered some of the critics of the film, as I understand it. The portrayal of Nancy Reagan as something of a control freak and mm-hmm. shrill, and even though very defensive and loyal to her husband, some of the Reagan's closest friends say exactly the same thing. Michael Deaver, no one was politically closer to the Reagans than Michael Deaver. And in his first memoir, again, not his second memoir, but in his first memoir, he says Nancy Reagan would drive him crazy, calling him up at all hours, consulting with astrologers. That didn't mean she was a bad person. It didn't mean she wasn't a loving wife. But that was her relationship with the White House staff. Conservatives who criticize that as character assassination have to deal with, I think, the record.
What looks like a fact there. Lynn's calling from Frankfort, Kentucky. Hi, Lynn. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Lynn, we've got the radio in the background giving us some trouble there.
Okay. Gotcha. I just wanted to call and say that I myself am opposed to docudramas because they tend to be a mix of fact and fiction, and I find them irritating for that reason. But that having been said, once we accept docudramas and have them on TV, we have to accept the fact that their primary purpose is entertainment, not to give information, not to be informative. And therefore, to attack them as being accurate or inaccurate is actually fairly silly. That if you want to worry about liberal or conservative bias on TV or in the media, what you need to do is attack programs that do that whose main purpose is to be informative, like news programs. It also seems to me that if you're fighting to keep a program from being biased, you don't replace it with another bias. You try to fight for the truth and for an accurate representation, and not for a conservative viewpoint instead of a liberal viewpoint. Either one is a bias, and either one is completely against the purposes of the media.
But are you saying, Lynn, that no matter how widely unrealistic a docudrama may be, it doesn't matter?
No, I'd rather see docudramas taken off the air, because I think that they are a mixture of fact and fiction. Their whole purpose really is to entertain. That's what their honest purpose is. But they are misleading because they try to present historical things. Like the movie Gladiator was completely inaccurate.
Right, a lot of entertainment.
But
it's an awful big industry, of course, devoted to churning those things out. And that's how popular history gets told in many cases. Jan's calling from Sherburn, Massachusetts. Hi, Jan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two comments. One is about sort of the political context in which all of this is happening. And personally, I wouldn't be upset about CBS taking off this docudrama for whatever reasons if it wasn't in the context of what seems to me to be greater secrecy in the government. When George Bush the Younger became president, he sealed off his father's presidential papers and said that presidential papers did not have to be available to the public after a certain length of time. There seems to be secrecy. Who was on the Energy Commission? A lot of secrecy. So
just too much secrecy in the air. Jan, we've got it, and thanks for your call. And Lynn, to you in Frankfort, Kentucky as well. Mark Kurtzgard, how about it? Does the truth ultimately out? Have we got a permanent damage here, or just a flap in the media teacup here?
Flap in a media teacup. I think the callers are right. Docudramas are an abomination. They're part of the larger issue that we're dancing around here, which is whether we are in the press. Are we here? Do we have real press freedom? Or are we always worried about pleasing the bottom line? And unfortunately, and again, as I said earlier, it was Ronald Reagan who ushered in so many of these changes when he deregulated television in the 1980s. People in my business as reporters have gone way too far in the direction of putting their fingers in the air and trying to decide what is politically palatable rather than doing our job, which is to tell the truth, warts and all, to the American people so that their democracy can function, so that they can have the information they need to make their own decisions. And the caller is also very right about the increase of secrecy recently under the Bush administration. That is another part of this problem.
So our caller in Frankfort, Kentucky, Lynn, says, hey, ultimately, let's look to the news and keep it straight and focused on what's going on. Mark Kurtzgard, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
My pleasure.
Mark Kurtzgard, journalist and author of On Bended Knee, The Press and the Reagan Presidency, and Tim Graham in Alexandria, Virginia. Thank you very much for being with us.
Yes.
Tim Graham is Director of Media Analysis at the Media Research Center. Michael Schaller in Tucson, Arizona, thanks to you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Michael Schaller, Professor of History at the University of Arizona. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, Ronald Reagan's letters to America. This is On Point. The CBS miniseries is not the only reason that interest in Ronald Reagan has been rekindled recently. Two collections of letters written by the 40th president have been published in recent weeks. Ralph E. Weber is the co-editor of one of the collections titled Dear Americans, Letters from the Desk of Ronald Reagan. While doing research at the Reagan Presidential Library in California, Weber uncovered a file featuring more than 3,500 handwritten letters from Ronald Reagan while president. Many of the letters were responses to mail from everyday Americans, grieving parents of service members killed in Lebanon, an Ithaca, New York man critical of Reagan's foreign policy, a seventh grader seeking funds after his mother declared his room a disaster area. In this radio diary, Ralph Weber describes the Reagan he sees in those handwritten letters.
Truly a warm human being who had compassion, who had a marvelous, marvelous sense of perspective. And in these letters, it is optimism, time after time after time. and though someone is unemployed, hopefully a job would be found. And cases of illness, he would also write to those who had just recovered from surgery. And indeed, one of the really, really interesting letters, I think, is soon after the assassination attempt at the end of March 1981, a couple of weeks later, he wrote by hand again to Leonid Brezhnev, president of the Soviet Union. And he said, "When we met, I asked if you were aware of the hopes and aspirations of millions and millions of people throughout the world, that they're dependent on the decisions that would be reached in your meetings. The people of the world still share the hope. Indeed, peoples of the world, despite differences in racial and ethnic origin, have very much in common. They want the dignity of having some control over their individual destiny. They want to work at the trade or craft of their own choosing and to be fairly rewarded. They want to raise their families in peace without harming anyone or suffering harm themselves. Governments exist for their convenience, not the other way around." One of the reports on the planned movie for CBS, which has been moved to Showtime, I understand, accuses him of showing no interest in the AIDS crisis, but rather asserting that the patients of AIDS essentially deserved their disease. One of the letters in our book is written in October of 1987, and he wrote in response to a woman whose sister, brother-in-law, and baby all had AIDS. And he said, "Since receiving your tragic story, our thoughts and prayers have been very much with you. I know that can be of very little comfort to you in the face of such undeserved horror inflicted on those you love. I assure you we have increased funding for research in our budget proposal, which Congress has not approved as yet. There is no question but that AIDS is an emergency calling on all of us to do everything we can in the face of tragedies such as the one you are experiencing. Your letter has increased our determination to do everything we can to halt this dread disease. Our deepest sympathy to you and your loved ones. God bless you and keep you. Sincerely, Ronald Reagan." He would frequently talk about the issue of religion in some of the speeches, but there's, I think, a very interesting one that he wrote in 1984, soon after Andropov, the Soviet president, died. And he said, "Watching the scenes of the Andropov funeral on TV, I wondered what thoughts people must have at such a time when their belief in no God or immortality is faced with death. Like you, I continue to believe that the hunger for religion may yet be a major factor in bringing about a change in the present situation." If you look at the handwritten letters, you'll see hardly any changes. Once in a while, maybe a word is changed, but almost no changes, a few shorthand abbreviations that he would use. But what I think is fascinating, again, is no changes in these letters. And as one person expressed it very well, that shows the person is writing from the heart. And I think that's a good description for these President Reagan letters, writing from the heart.
Ralphie Weber is the co-editor of Dear Americans, Letters from the Desk of Ronald Reagan. He's a professor of history emeritus at Marquette University. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.